Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You're very welcome to Liveline. Cullum O'Munga in here, 087 484 8888 for your WhatsApps, 51551 for your texts. You may have heard the news breaking there when we were talking to Louise. At about 20 to 1, that RTE has released a statement saying it will not participate in the Eurovision in 2026 if Israel is taking part. Now, Slovenia and Spain's public service broadcasters have also threatened similar withdrawals if Israel is participating. The statement that RTE has released says that it is RTE's position that Ireland will not take part in the 2026 Eurovision Song Contest if the participation of Israel goes ahead. And the final decision regarding Ireland's participation will be made once the EBU's decision has been made. So it's over to the other public service broadcasters around the rest of Europe. It's not an EU organisation. It's wider than that. There are many public service broadcasters involved in the EBU. That's why Israel is one of the participants in the Eurovision. It's one of the participating public service broadcasters in the EBU. Ireland will not be participating, as I say, if Israel does in 2026. And the rationale RTE gave for its decision, it said RTE feels that Ireland's participation would be unconscionable given the ongoing and appalling loss of lives in Gaza. RTE is also deeply concerned by the targeted killing of journalists in Gaza and the denial of access to international journalists to the territory. A lot of other international organisations are concerned about that as well. Indeed, there's a case before the Israeli Supreme Court with the Foreign Journalists Association, who represents foreign journalists within Israel, taking that case to try and get access to Gaza. And the RTE statement concludes that it is also making its decision about the because of the plight of the hostages. The prevailing view amongst a lot of the hostage families in Israel is the continuation of the war in Gaza by Israel is jeopardizing the lives of the hostages there. So that's RTE's statement. We did contact them. They said they were leaving it at a statement. We did ask to speak to the Director General, Kevin Backhurst, in order to provide maybe a bit further detail about the process behind how this decision was made and why this decision was made wider than this. Was it on foot of public contact that was made with RTE? Was it concerns by licence payers that were raised about RTE's participation in the European Broadcasting Union? But ultimately, look, they're leaving it at a statement. That interview's not going to go ahead with the Director General or anybody else there. They say they are leaving it at a statement for now. So that is the breaking news that we got just before 1 o'clock. Now, Joanne, good afternoon to you.
Hi, Colm. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. You will be... You'll get the chance to taste Westlife. Well, you won't anymore because we don't lick stamps, but you'll get the chance to see Westlife on the postage stamp. What do you think?
That's quite exciting, to be honest. I hadn't been aware of this news, which is most unlike me, until your research team touched base with me earlier today. But look, long live Westlife and more power to them, and let's send them all over the world on the back of postcards and envelopes.
Right, and you're surprised you didn't know, because I mean, if we were using tabloid shorthand for you, you are Westlife superfan Joanne Tierney. Would that be fair to say?
Well, far from superfan, but no, I'd enjoy them, yeah, and I appreciate their music and work, and I've seen them a handful of times. But I suppose you could probably find a more ardent fan or a more more well versed fan than myself. However.
However,
that being said, at the tender age of 9 at Christmas time, Santa Claus did bring me my first ever CD player way back when, and my first CD was Westlife's debut album.
And is that where the love affair began?
Enough, Westlife. I think it did, yeah, because I was a little bit too young, kind of being a baby of the 1990s, a little bit too young for Boyzone officially, kind of liked what they were coming out, but not really into the teeny bop at that stage. And Westlife kind of came at a good point when I was kind of, I guess, finding my own music and finding my way in the world, and really had a love affair with pop music in particular. And Westlife just stuck, I suppose.
And they're still going, which, you know, they have accompanied you throughout your formative experiences from nine through the teenage years. You may at some point in your teenage years have developed a favourite. For anyone who's not familiar with Westlife, obviously the founder, one of the founder members was Brian McFadden, who doesn't feature in the Stamps. Perhaps more of that later. But Cian Egan, Mark Feely, Shane Filan, you know, which of them? Nicky Byrne, of course. Which of them was your favourite?
Again, it would have changed. Say when I was at the get-go, I suppose Cian might have been my favourite, and then over time, so I appreciated Shane and Mark for their vocals, and Nicky for being an all-rounder broadcaster in every which way you might find him. So
he can kick a ball as well, famously.
Exactly, yeah, he can. He's had a couple of decent goals in his time. Yeah, it's hard to pick a favourite, I suppose, because you'd kind of go, oh yeah, I like Nicky for such a reason and I like Shane for such a reason. I guess like picking your child if you had one, or a favourite child. So you don't, you just collectively say, fair play, lads, well done. And it's, some of all its parts.
All right. And
so you can't just pick one over the other.
Explain the music. Where does it take you to?
Nostalgia for me, I suppose, particularly say the likes of World of Your Own and Swear It All Over Again.
Let's take you into your special place here.
Yeah, that'd be good for a box. I'm not going to sing a lot with a column.
are you swaying in your seat?
I am actually, yeah.
You're loving the bit of World of Our Own. So where does Westlife take you? Is it sort of the pure, unadulterated good fun? Is it the heart-tugging romance of reconciliation after breakup that you get from that song? Is it imagining the beautiful blonde tresses and brown locks of the various members of Westlife? Is it the dance? Is it the nice guy images? What is it about Westlife that has been part of the enjoyment?
I guess some of everything that you just said. I don't know how they captured the zeitgeist, and I don't know how I came to be a fan, but it just ended up that way. And just to capture the imagination, I suppose. I don't know. Definitely find someone who's more well versed and more more au fait and more eloquent in their explanation of why they enjoy the music.
Do you still have the first CD?
It's probably gone to the recycling centre, but I certainly have it on Spotify now.
It's on the playlist, is it?
It's on the playlist, yeah.
Right. And any other favourite songs, any hits?
Oh, God, how long do you have, Colm?
Go on, hit us with another one there. We might even have it here ready to play. Go on, we'll see if we anticipate.
Against All Odds would be there.
Against All Odds, I don't know. I don't know whether we have that one. We'll come back to it. We may come back to it. Any of the other ones they've done? Go on.
Despite, was it the Irish Times article that I read, the Raise Me Up, You Raise Me Up for different reasons as well. We would have sung that in a secondary school choir of mine way back when as well. So that in the time of our singing it just coincided with Westlife's release of it. But we didn't sing it because Westlife sang it.
Okay.
We were the original almost.
I suppose on the day that's in it, with their pictures on postage stamps, we better hit this one when you're looking like that.
Oh, yes.
Now,
like that one too.
That bopping in the seat for that one too, yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Not in the head wrong.
Okay, well, we have Leanne the mega fan.
Yeah.
Leanne, how are you?
All good. How are you?
Good, thanks. The postage stamps. 25 years of Westlife. The 25 happiest years of your life. Or am I overdoing that? Maybe
no,
you're not 25 yet.
It. Not at all. Oh, I wish I was only 25.
Will you be out to buy the stamps? There'll be people who never heard from you before. Your emails will be gone. You'll be just sending letters.
Stop.
As an excuse.
I'm just going to blow up now. There's going to be nobody is going to hear from me going forward. I'm just writing letters to everybody from now on.
That's it. Everyone's on your Christmas card list. People you fell out with 25 years ago are back on the Christmas card list.
That's absolutely it. I don't even send Christmas cards, but this year is going to be the year for me to send Christmas cards. Everybody is getting one.
Right. And come here to me. Let's you've we've seen there's a group shot of the current members of Westlife, and then there are individual shots. So, you know, who was your favourite back in the day, or do you still have a favourite?
My all time is Nicky Byrne. Always has been from the time I was seven.
Is it the dub thing?
I don't know what it is. It's just that Nicky Byrne has always been my go-to. So, I've never changed. Always been Nicky.
All right. Well, we'll make your day here. We'll hit a bit of Westlife again.
I go on.
They are your special thing.
Ah, they really are. They really are. That was my wedding song and everything. So, of course, they have to be a massive part of my wedding day.
Right. Have you seen them live?
I've been to every concert bar their 2012 farewell tour. I actually lived in Australia for a year, but my best friend, Barbara, I don't know why I was called her Barbara. Her name is Babs. Anyway, she went and she Skyped me from the concert. So I was there in spirit, but that was the only one I missed.
You can send her an apology card with a Westlife stamp stuck to it.
With a Westlife stamp on it.
Come on, you did it on purpose. It's only another excuse to send a card. So when you say you went to all of them bar one, how many gigs is that?
I don't know. Like, I mean, I
double
was pretty
figures?
Sure that absolutely. Right. I think they backed Boyzone when I was about seven at one stage. I think that was my first ever encounter of Westlife.
Who brought you to that?
My mom.
And was she into them? What does she think of them?
I think it was Boyzone we went to. I don't think, it certainly wasn't Westlife. I think they just backed, now I could be wrong,
right,
so don't quote me on this, but I'm nearly sure that that was what it was. They were just backing. I don't even think they were called Westlife at that time. I think they were Westside.
Right, so you go right back with them.
Oh, I go all the way.
Right.
All the way back.
And come here, Joanne, have you seen them live as well?
A handful of times, yes, Colm. Most recently, the Aviva 2 years ago, I want to say.
Right, and how was that? What's the experience like going now as opposed to the nine-year-old you sticking on a CD? It's probably loads of people of a variety of ages, people bringing their children at this stage. What's the vibe like at Westlife now?
That's so exciting. But any live music event is exciting. I'm a gig buff, I suppose. Gig going buff, and yeah, nothing beats the live music experience, but to see it at scale of Westlife and others, but Westlife in particular, they always hold a special spot in the heart.
Leanne, it wouldn't be true to say that your marriage is based on a shared love of Westlife, would it?
No, surely. He's a Seeker fan.
Right, but
he pretends he's not a super fan. So he's an Oasis super fan, and I'm a Westlife super fan. So we're from two different scales of the.
That's like West Side Story, is it? We could call it Westlife Story. He's from the he's from the Sharks, and you're from the Jets. In this
absolutely.
Musical divide, love across the divide.
Well, listen to me. I met Nicky Byrne at Oasis on the Saturday night.
Well, isn't it just as well you're married to an Oasis superfan for that experience
100%,
alone?
100%. I wasn't even supposed to go on the Saturday, so that was the universe.
And could you speak? Are you just out of hospital?
I was just like, I mean, I was all over the place, to be perfectly honest with you. And actually, my husband has just started up a clothing brand. It's called Propel Clothing. And I don't know whether you noticed today, but when he put up his picture or his reel on Instagram, released in his stamps, he's wearing a Propel hoodie. So what a great moment in my life.
All right. So what did you say to him anyway? Did you tell him, Nicky, I love you?
Yeah, well, I tried to like be as like composed as I possibly could, but it's very difficult when you're meeting somebody who you absolutely love, you know.
Did you get his autograph?
I got a picture with him, and actually that wasn't the first time. I actually, myself and my sister-in-law, followed him to the toilet in the Blue Bar in Skerries about 10 years ago.
All the way in?
All the way in.
We stood
right outside the door and waited for him to come out, and the poor fella, when he came out, he was like, what the hell? So, but he was so sound, and he took a selfie with us then as well. And yeah, they're just, he's really nice, I'd say, like as a person as well, as you know, obviously right. He's a superstar, but really, really nice, genuine person.
Do you wear a Fitbit?
And I'm not just saying that because I love him. Like, I genuinely mean
but you
that.
Do, well, you do love him. I mean, we are pretty clear about this at this stage. Do you?
A little bit, like, right. Like, I mean, I don't want to have to leave my husband and my kids, but I mean, if needs most and all that, you know.
There's an understanding there that for Nicky Byrne, that just might have to happen.
Yeah.
And come here, you're on a bit of a bad line there, but I think we can just, you have a tracker watch, have you?
I do, yes.
And what was the heartbeat like? Did you manage to look back at the heartbeat?
You know that the Garmin actually alerted me to tell me my heart rate was high and that I should practice some breathing techniques that day.
Okay, so the next time you meet him,
that'll tell you.
You're going to have to go into an immediate yoga pose, are you?
100%.
Well, don't leave it too late because, you know, in later life, your heart might be in a more delicate condition for the next time you meet Nicky Byrne.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Hopefully I won't be that old, though, by the next time I meet him.
Well, and you won't have to follow him to the jacks either. I mean, look,
it's... No, 100%. Like, it doesn't really look great, you know, when you're following somebody who's promoting your husband's clothing brand to the toilet. So I'm going to try and avoid that in future.
Right. And anyway, Joanne, sorry, back to the point of the stamps there. Do you, will you be buying a few of the stamps to send out your Christmas cards this year?
Sure, I might as well.
Right. And come here, but we can't let this conversation go without asking, what do you make of it being the four-member Westlife? At the 25th anniversary, do you think there should have been a slot for Brian in there? Joanne?
No.
Right. Sorry. No, we know where you stand on it anyway. Like, yeah. Joanne, anyway, go on.
But look, they're so well known now as the four-piece.
Okay.
That, look...
We won't get into why you think what you think.
You're damned if you don't.
Okay, so...
Look, we know them so long. Joseph, we know them 20 plus years as the four-piece. So it made sense to just go with the four. Because, look, while Brian McFadden was around in the infancy and Joey had his role and played his part, look, it is what it is. And they went with the current marketing strategy, I suppose.
That's
and
it.
OnPlus kind of went, oh, no, it's the four Westlife members, so...
That's it. Leanne, we got your answer. You were a straight no.
Sorry.
So Pete Best and was it Stu Sutcliffe don't appear in the Beatles memorabilia. So, you know, Brian McFadden doesn't appear in Westlife.
Yeah, like he directed his babe. He's out.
Right. Okay. Well, there you go. Olivia, good afternoon to you.
Hi. How are you?
You were at the launch.
I was at the launch in Sligo,
Just home
there about 20 minutes.
And come here, I don't know what the format of the launch was. Were any of the lads there?
No, unfortunately not. Shane is getting ready for the Relay for Life here in Sligo at the weekend. And yeah, they just unfortunately weren't there.
Were you hoping to see them?
But it's still a privilege.
And
still a big privilege, yeah.
So you went to the launch. Did you get a look at the stamps up close?
Yeah, so it was an OnPlus competition run through Ocean FM on Sligo. And they gave us a lovely framed picture of the stamps. And we got to take home a couple of things. And yeah, it was very, very exciting.
And sadly, you didn't get to take Westlife home. Just
replica stamps. No, unfortunately not. No, Shane's brother... Finbar was there, so we thought he might appear, but no, he's just a bit too busy at the moment.
And come here, what do they mean to Sligo? Before we get into your own kind of relationship with them, what are they to Sligo as kind of hometown lads, with the exception obviously of Nicky Byrne? What do they mean to the county in terms of their international stardom and their general popularity?
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, and you know what? They're nice, genuine people as well. Anybody in Sligo really has known them since way back before IOU. They were, you know, in the local theatre for shows and stuff, so they would have been known pre-Westlife. And we're just extremely proud. They brought tourism to Sligo,
Do you get many people coming to Sligo, just coming down to kind of see the old Westlife spots, hang out where Westlife used to hang out? Really, yeah?
Yeah, oh God, yeah. And we have, there's a painting of them on a wall up beside Sligo Cathedral. And people have told me in the past they have come to Sligo just to see that.
Right.
As well, so.
And come here,
try and find where they live and, yeah.
Oh, really? Try and track down the family home. Is it the original family home or where they're living at the moment?
Well, a bit of both. I actually was at a concert in Galway way back and I was sitting beside this couple who, an elderly couple who had retired, and they'd actually, it was the farewell tour, and they had actually moved back to Ireland to just be in around the vicinity of Sligo and Dublin or whatever, where West Side were from. It's a true story. They'd retired.
A retired couple, which kind of wouldn't generally be their target demographic, would it?
Yeah. Well, I don't know, I think.
You think they're for everyone,
do you? I have my seven-year-old with me today, and from young up to old, I think everybody loves a bit of Westlife. How could you not?
You'll still be listening to them anyway, long into your own retirement. And come here to me. Have you been with them for the whole 25 years?
Yeah, I've seen them over 30 times in concert.
30 times, yeah. Right. Did you buy any merch?
33.
Did you have the T-shirts, the posters?
A few bits down through the years, all right, yeah.
Were they on your wall?
Oh, they were, yeah. All over.
All right.
They're all up right here now. My stamps are hanging here in my sitting room, pride of place. So.
Oh, yeah. And did you get a nice job? What size is the framed stamp?
I'd say it's about, oh, God, I don't know, maybe just smaller than A4.
All right. Come here. Never mind the picture. There's a fella on the other line here. Cian, how are you? Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Cian, Cian Egan, there's...
Hi, Cian.
Cian.
Hello, how are you?
We were all waiting for you this morning. we were waiting patiently in the GPO this morning, but I know you're busy.
And you're looking well in the stamps there, Cian. What do you make of them?
Ah, it's an amazing honour to be, you know, to be honoured like that by Ompost, and just, you know, I suppose, you know, when you hear all these things, it's not until your mother is ringing you up going, oh my God, I can't believe you're on a stamp, that you realise, you know, how special it all is, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's silver anniversary. Is it hard to believe?
It is hard to believe, you know. I mean, obviously we started the band when we were very young, and, you know, we were 16, 17 when we started in Sligo. And then as the years rolled on, you know, we couldn't believe that we managed to have the career that we have. And here we are 25 years later, you know, still having an amazing career, getting ready to gear up for another big run at everything. And, you know, it's just, it's incredible. And the loyalty and support that the fans have shown us throughout the years has been so, so amazing.
Yeah, and we heard that Olivia there saying she's seen you around 30 times, which is more than once a year, is it, Olivia?
I think four in 1 year.
And what about yourself, Leanna? You must be hitting more than once a year at this stage as well, are you?
Absolutely. All of them. Like, I mean, as I said, the only one I missed was the farewell tour, but I didn't really miss it. I only missed it in body. I was there. I was on Skype the whole time. So, and I think it was about 4 o'clock in the morning in Sydney at that stage as well.
And
my husband loved me.
We'll save you the price of one stamp here, Leanne, so you won't have to send Cian a thank you card. But what has the music, you can tell Cian yourself what the music has meant to you over the last 25 years.
Cian, it's absolutely magic. And anybody who knows me or knows my friend group or my family group, like, you've just hit home to every single one of us. And I think I can say that about every girl group anyway in Ireland. You are iconic.
Thank you so much.
Olivia.
It's always strange to hear things like that. But okay.
Olivia, do you want to, we'll save you the price of a stamp as well. It's the €3 stamp. Go on. What do you want to say to Cian about the joy the music has brought?
Yeah, we're just, Cian, I'm from Sligo myself, and we're just so, so proud
of you.
Oh,
are you? Very good.
Yeah, thank you. Our paths have crossed a few times. But I want to tell you really quickly, there was a girl there today, Nikki. She won the Ocean FM kindly gave two tickets to go and see in London. Unfortunately, I didn't win. Quite upset. But anyway, this girl, Nikki, won them. But she has your boxers. She won them on a competition who did she say now? Alive and Kicking.
Hang on.
In
a
magazine years and years ago.
She caught them or she won them?
She won them. she won them.
Wow.
To Alive and Kicking. And she had them. She had them with her today.
Cian, do you remember putting the old boxers up for the competition?
I don't, I'll be honest with you. You know, Alive and Kicking now, we're talking way back in the early noughties when that TV show was still going. So, you know, there's been a long time passing saying with plenty of different things happening here, there and everywhere. But, you know, it just goes to show like how far back the whole career has gone and how long these these fans have been with us, and it, you know, it's just, we obviously wouldn't be doing it today if it wasn't for all the fans out there and for all the love that, that everybody has shown us throughout the years, you know. And we're really excited about the future as well. You know, we've got lots of stuff in the pipeline, lots of big announcements coming up in the near future. I can't say too much about too much, but you know the way it always is. Just kind of, we're getting really excited now for the 25th anniversary and getting it all ready to go, you know.
Yeah, and look, I mean, everybody, you know, humans in a band have their ups and downs in the background. They still have to come out on stage and present the face and everything else. When you hear that level of positivity from fans, how important is that to get you through the ups and downs in life that are going on in the background, you know, when you're not out on stage?
Oh, look, I think, to be honest with you, you know, like, it isn't the easiest job. Like, it's not a job. I know that, but it's not the easiest lifestyle in the world, especially to keep it going for so long. You know, we're all family men now, and we all have children. And, you know, when we do go on tour, we have to leave everybody behind. And, you know, kind of like you could be on the other side of the world in different time zones for 4 to 6 weeks, you know, without seeing any of your family members. And, you know, it is the fans that make it go, that make you feel kind of at home. It's that time when you step out on stage and you hear the roar of the audience and they're all singing the lyrics of the songs back to you. You know, that's what makes you realize how special it is and how special it is what we have. And I think, you know, we're kind of the types of people that, you know, we feel honored to be still doing this so many years later. And it would be very, very difficult for us to give it up when we have so much love and support still out there for us. So, you know, I think that's the big thing in it all. You know, it's all about the fans, and it's all about that emotion that is created at a gig, you know, at a concert, you know, for us as well as the audience. I mean, we feel the emotions just as much as the audience does. We're just very good at hiding it and pretending to have that, you know, that smouldering look that we pull off, but really there's the belly is going over and the butterflies are going crazy and the tears are filling up in the eyes. But, you know, we do our best to kind of like just make the best shows that we possibly can and bring people on a journey. And, you know, all the nostalgic things that have happened throughout the years, the different songs, you know, it's just magic to be able to keep doing it.
And do you ever find yourself, you know, you're up on stage, you're performing, as you say, look, one of the other lads might be getting emotional, you might be getting emotional together, but is there a moment where you're nearly pinching yourself and it takes you back to when you started out and it's like you're beginning all over again?
Oh, for sure. Look, you know, I think when you think back to when we did start out, you know, we were playing small little nightclubs in Sligo as IOU in 1996 and 97, you know. And then you kind of fast forward to Crow Park when we've got 85,000 people in there. You know, I think we've played Crow Park 6 times, and you know, I know we've done Aviva a handful of times as well. But you know, you just, them moments are incredible. I know one of the girls there was talking about the farewell tour, but the very last night of the farewell tour in Crow Park was probably the biggest emotional night of it all, because we knew we were coming to an end, without knowing that we were going to come back a few years later. But, and then the very first night of the comeback, it was in Belfast, and I'll never forget walking back out on the stage and hearing that roar of the audience again. That, all of them moments, you know, they're unforgettable. You know, I think, you know, we'll carry them moments with us for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, what was it that made you, like, you know, collectively, was it meeting people, or, you know, obviously, you know, you have to earn a living and everything else, but, you know, was there a desire to get back out there and perform for the fans? Is that what ultimately brought you back?
Know, like, I think you just end up missing it, you know? Like, when we broke up back in 2012, we'd been going since we were very young. And, you know, I think we needed that big break. I think we needed to find what life was without Westlife, you know? We all had families, we all had young children. You know, the school life, all of that type of stuff. And it was hard to kind of like keep going at the pace that we were moving at. So I think then when it all ended and we were all kind of like sitting at home and living our normal lives, and we got to know what normal life felt like, you know, you then start looking back on your career and kind of going, wow, can you believe we even did that? And then, you know, myself and Shane bumped into each other, because Shane's married to my first cousin. So myself and Shane bumped into each other at a family reunion. That sparked kind of, you know, a few memory conversations over a few beers. And then all of a sudden the wives were chatting about having dinners and getting out to restaurants to see each other again. And then it just kind of all started rolling again, the whole idea of doing it again. And then everybody got in touch with everybody, and everybody felt the time was right to kind of give it another whirl. And you know, that was back in 2019. Obviously, COVID had an impact on that as well. We all stopped for a few years. But, you know, it's just great to be feeling like we're doing it all again, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, from this distance with, you know, your face in a postage stamp, looking back on 25 years of Westlife, if you could pull aside that young man who is in IOU and say, you know, here's a bit of advice to you, what would you say to him? I mean, I'm sure you'd be showing him good things in your life at the moment, but, you know, any advice to your young self from this point?
You know, to be honest, I think everything has worked out so well for us. I would say just follow your gut instinct, which is what we've always done as individuals and as a band, is to follow your gut instinct, chase the dream. You know, dreams do come true. Chase it, make it happen, you know, fight for us, don't give up on us, and, you know, good things can happen. I mean, things have changed dramatically in the industry and in the world in the last 25 years, but the fact that we're still here, still doing it, I think, you know, it would be very hard to look back and think that we've, you know, I don't think I'd change anything, if that makes any sense. I think that, you know, we've been very lucky.
It's worked out. It's worked out pretty well for you. Come here. I mean, like, you're appearing in a stamp, you know, people can kind of, maybe, I wouldn't say dismissive, but they, you know, they may not see pop as part of culture, but like, you're on a stamp now. That's a kind of, a mark of respect on a cultural level. What does it mean to you in that respect?
Well, you know, it's just the honour of it, you know. I mean, it was really my mother who made me realise how big of a deal it was. She was like, "You're not real." Like, and I was like, "Yeah," but she was like, "You know, it's just a stamp moment." She was like, "No, you don't realise this is like, this doesn't happen to every act." I suppose when you're living in that world, you don't really realise what's going on. I think it was the same, you know, before we broke up in 2012. We didn't realise how big we were or how amazing we were. It wasn't until we seen other bands do it, like One Direction, where you'd be kind of going, oh, well, hold on, were we bigger than that, you know, or were we that size, or, you know, what? It's a very kind of strange bubble to be living in, because you're just in that bubble all the time. So it's not until, you know, I just came from the shop there myself and, you know, the post office was there and I saw the stamps and it was like, oh,
that's
wow,
a bit
mad,
isn't it?
Stamps are out. Yeah, it is. It's crazy. But, you know, I suppose you try not to get carried away with it. It's a huge honour. And I think that's what we feel, you know. It's brilliant, you know, that after 25 years on post want to give us that honour. And, you know, I have a plaque arriving tomorrow with the discs, and it will hang proudly and it will hang proudly in my home. And, you know, I don't know. I suppose I don't really know what else to say about it.
Yeah, for sure. And look, people, it's 25 years. It's the current lineup rather than the starting lineup. That's on post's call rather than a Westlife call, because, you know, there'll be inevitably commentary about that.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, obviously Brian was a huge part of Westlife for the first, I think, 5 or 6 years, you know, and we just continued on, and, you know, we have very fond memories of Brian being in the group and all the things that he's done with us. You know, he's off doing his thing now and we're off doing ours, and, you know, everything is positive. It's all love. There's no negativity between any of us. You know, we see him every now and again and we chat to him and, you know, we reminisce over old times, you know, but I think that's just the way it is now, you know. That's just how it's all, you know, that's just the way it is now. You know, he's kind of doing his thing and we're doing ours.
And did you have to go in for a special shoot for this? Because, I mean, there's a different one. You're kind of, you're looking at the camera, and then Mark is kind of giving a bit of a cocked eyebrow, and Nicky looks like he's made him laugh. These are all kind of, they were given to on post, were they?
They were given to unpost, yeah. It was just a case of, you know, it was a photo shoot that we did, and, you know, the photograph, you know, when you do these photo shoots, there's so many different things, so many different setups in one day, and then, you know, okay, that's the look for unpost, you know, that's sent out to them, and they choose what ones they like, and that's the ones they chose.
So come here to me, will you be sending Christmas cards this Christmas?
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I will. Hopefully I won't have to pay for any stamps. But
right, okay.
We'll see what happens.
Would it be a bit mad to be sending ones? Would it be a good or a bad thing to be sending stamps with your own face on them off to the list, the extensive list of people you're sending Christmas cards to?
I think I'll probably use the other boys rather than my own face.
Right. I mean, you may not even look after Christmas. If your house is anything like mine, you may not even look after the Christmas cards there.
Well, it's a bit of a mix between the both of us, to be honest.
Okay. Well, listen, for Leanne and Olivia, let's play out here. Thanks a million, Cian.
Oh, thanks,
not at all.
Cian.
You're more than welcome.
Thanks, Cian.
Thank you, ladies. Lovely to talk to you.
Yeah. You too.
Talk to you soon.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Anne-Marie Forbes, good afternoon to you.
Hi, how are you?
Well, how are you? We're sticking, for the benefit of listeners, we're staying in the northwest. We were talking about Sligo's finest there a minute ago. We're across the into the Mayo border there to Ballina. What's after happening to the tidy towns?
Yes, so unfortunately, our story was very, very sad this time last week. So last Wednesday morning, our tidy town staff went to the premises where we hold all our equipment to do our daily work to discover we had been broken into. And sadly, they had taken all the tools that we would use on a daily basis, week after week, to keep our beautiful town and surrounding hinterlands neat and tidy, and to present Ballina as being the amazing place that it is, not just to our own community, but to everybody that would either come to Ballina or pass through Ballina.
And cleaned out, all the kit gone.
Totally cleaned out of all our hand tools, which are vitally, vitally important to us. Our bigger items weren't touched, thanks be to God. But the bigger items can only do some of the work. The smaller items are the things that do the nitty-gritty of the work that we carry out each week.
Now, look, you're working with good material in Ballina. People would be aware that, you know, the River Moy flows through the town. It's accessible by anglers. It's a, you know, a well-known town in one of Ireland's beauty spots in the northwest there. So you obviously, you have the motivation there to tidy up the town. But it was a kind of a labour of love to put the volunteers together to get the Tidy Towns Committee going, and not easy.
Oh, no, it wasn't. And if I could just bring you back a little bit, probably started about 25 years ago with a group of volunteers, as you rightly said. Myself and my husband were involved at the time, and then I came back into it again many years ago. But it was really put together the way we are now by two men. And if I could just pay acknowledgement to them. One is the late Mr. Jim Friel, who sadly passed away and left us in May of last year. And the other one is our supervisor of our community employment scheme, Michael Conlon. So with those two men and their foresight and their cleverness, and with the support of Mayo County Council and the local district office here in Ballina, the Ballina Tidy Towns was born, and it went from strength to strength every year. We have an amazing task force in the local district office. So we work with the engineers, we work with the outdoor crew, we work with the manager, we work with the clerk of works, and we just have a really, really good setup. And then they fund us through local GMA funding every year. And
that's,
then we go out.
That's local
with
authority
our
funding. That's the general municipal allocation. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is, yes. And they fund us every year, and we go out, and we quietly, and I must say we've always done it quietly, we've gone out and we've kept the town neat and tidy and done the best we can in relation to just keeping it as it is.
Yeah, and look, all you ask to do is be allowed to do your volunteering, get the quiet satisfaction of your work. Obviously, there is a competitive element to it in the tidy towns, and you'd no doubt, you know, like to win that, but your satisfaction is really is beautifying the town, making it a better amenity for people to enjoy, even if they never see that work going on. And all I suppose you would be all you would ask is the odd contribution to fundraising for your efforts, and not to be robbed.
Absolutely, that was it, not to be robbed. And sadly, we were hidden in public sight for many, many years, but we had to change our location. So we're only in the new location a week and a half when we were robbed. And there was thousands of euros worth of equipment gone. It was absolutely soul-destroying.
Really? Do you know how much, roughly? I mean, what kind of kit
around
are you talking about?
Around 12,000 of 12,000 euros worth of equipment was taken. And I'd just like to kind of say we're probably one of the best-equipped tidy towns in the country. And that's some, you know.
Right. Or you were until you were robbed.
We were robbed. Surely.
Well, what are you talking about? Like ride-on lawnmowers, that kind of stuff, is it?
No, it was more the handheld stuff. So industrial strimmers, hand tools, hedge clippers, and all the stuff that could be neatly, I suppose, packed away and got away quickly, but means so much to us. And like we were stood last Wednesday morning looking at the guards, and they were stood looking at us, and they were amazing. They were straight down to us, the local Gardaí here. And we were thinking, where are we going to go? Anyway, then the amazing happened. And it's just such an amazing story. And, you know, it's heartwarming, especially in today's world, to see communities and the way they come in behind people. And I suppose it gave us the understanding of how much we are respected in the town and how much people do admire the work we're doing and how thankful they were. And up to that, we were just quietly plodding along, not thinking anyone was taking any heed of us.
Right. But I suppose, as you said, you did lose Jim Friel last year. He was a former Garda who'd done a lot of work in other areas of his work in the town. I mean, do you think the response to the Tidy Towns Committee was as much about the roles the personalities played in the life of Ballina as it was about the Tidy Towns Committee?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Jim was... He just was out on his own, and there's not a person the length and breadth of this town that he didn't touch very personally and privately in regards to their lives. Even my own, when I was rearing my own sons, if I ran into difficulty, I could pick up the phone and ring Jim and say, what do you think? You know, it takes a village to rear a child, but he was just second to none. And he was so clever himself, Mike Cannon, and whereas some Tidy Towns, we had the fabulous Carrick and Shannon Tidy Towns down with us. We're visiting where I work in the Jackie Clark in Ballina last Saturday, and we were talking, and their setup is slightly different in that they hire in their maintenance, and that's brilliant as well. But this man thought, no, we're going to buy our equipment. And then there was the whole story of maintaining the equipment and replacing the equipment.
Right.
And that went on for years and years. We were in some way last Wednesday, the downfall of our own success, because if we just had a shovel and a spade, we could be like the snail and put them in our house on our back and go home. But, you know, we weren't. We had to have this big warehouse for our equipment.
And will the community response mean that you'll be able to replace all of that equipment?
Oh, 100%. So I had thrown my phone to one side on Wednesday evening, and when I got it on Thursday morning, I'd missed calls from Minister Dara Cleary, from Senator Mark Duffy, from the President of the Chamber, Mary Moyles, here in Ballina, basically saying, look, we need to give permission to hand your name over to our local SuperValue. And SuperValue is the partner with the National Tidy Towns.
Right.
And the lovely John Maloney rang me, and I have to say my heart was in my boots up until his call. And he basically, he picked up the spirits and he said, we're going to look after this. The town is going to come in behind you. And him and his son, who was opening a new Maxall Centre down the road from their own family business, extending their family business. And, you know, that's amazing because they give such employment in our local area.
Right.
He says, we're going to get businesses. So he pledged 5,000 worth of equipment. And then a young lad from Chubb Security came in, and he's going to put an alarm, Ronan Conmey, Mescal's tool hire came in, the Downhill Hotel, Twin Trees came in. There were so many businesses that came in. And then there was also quiet businesses. And then I got a call from a transition year teacher in our local secondary school, St. Murdoch's College, yesterday. And she says, can we have your permission to put in for a permit to do a flag day with our transition year boys? They're so touched by the fact that our town, that was the way she put it, our town had been robbed of these items to do the work. So they're going ahead. And that younger generation in our community, you know, you'd sometimes wonder, do they know what the Tidy Towns is? They knew more probably about the Tidy Towns than I know myself.
Well,
the length I'm dealing with.
Isn't it a good lesson for a town to learn about itself that the minority that robbed that equipment is far outweighed by the majority that came to your aid and, you know, was prepared to replace the tools? Anne-Marie Forbes, thanks for telling us that. And I suppose initially
you're
a tale
welcome.
Of woe, but a very heartwarming end to it. We'll take a break. Back in a minute.
Lifeline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Friday, October 24th, people are going to be going to the polls to elect Ireland's next president. And so far, there are three candidates in the race. Fianna Fáil has nominated Jim Gavin. Fine Gael has nominated Heather Humphreys and a number of parties, People Before Profit Solidarity, the Social Democrats and Labour, as well as a number of other independents, are backing Catherine Connolly. They have all come to the presidential race through the Oireachtas members route, getting 20 members each. Sinn Féin as a party is still considering its position and making up its mind as to whether it will use its TDs to put a nominee into the race for the presidency. And the other route is local councils. That's where people need to get the nomination of four local authorities, and people are making their pitch at the moment to get that. But in some cases, members of parties who are already backing a candidate won't be facilitating the entry into the race of another candidate. Councillor Ciarán Fisher, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me on.
You're in Louth.
I am. I'm an independent candidate in Dundalk, Carnforth and Louth.
Right. And I mean, you know what the lie of the land is at the moment, as I've outlined it, with the candidates that are in the race at the moment. We don't know if anyone else will enter into the race, but you're concerned about this, are you?
Well, I suppose I just want to draw attention to the fact that it's very difficult to get on the ballot. I think sometimes, because the election is only 7 years, people might forget how it works in the meantime. And there's only really the Oireachtas route of getting on the ballot by getting backed by a major party, or the council route. And it's quite difficult to get in through the council route. I'm a new councillor, so I'm learning the process. So this is my first presidential campaign as a councillor. And when I was looking into it, I realised it's going to be quite difficult to get nominated by a council, because you need to get agreement across the council to get that nomination, and the candidate must get four councils.
Right. So, I mean, look, you're 36 years of age, I think.
I am. I could have ran. I decided not to.
Yeah, you did, yeah. Well, that's, you know, and to the point, there are barriers to becoming president. The bar has to be set somewhere for, I suppose, a level of what you might call quality control, or to establish a minimum mandate. And there's a certain amount of experience being factored in. People may agree or disagree with the age of 35. But do you agree with the notion that there should be some limits?
No, I agree completely. Like, it shouldn't be easy, and I'm not about lowering standards, but it's just a reflection upon the process. I'm only kind of opening it up as a conversation. I'm not saying I have the solutions, but it's very difficult to get on. I was listening to your previous piece there about Westlife and saying following your dreams, and I thought it was interesting. Like, you can't really aspire to be President of Ireland. Any young person that's grown up thinking, oh, I'll have to be President of Ireland, it's very, very unlikely. You'll need the backing of a major political party. You'll probably need €500,000 in your pocket to do it. So it's not an open contest. And I think there should be more diversity of candidates. I think that the voters should ultimately be deciding who is the president. But at the moment, it's being decided by the political parties.
All right. Although sometimes there is, you know, the Labour Party was a pretty, you know, middling size party when Mary Robinson ran, and she also had the backing of Democratic Left and, you know, other civil society organisations. But, you know, she ran against the odds. She wasn't a Labour Party member herself. She was, and then she left. So, you know, it does happen against the odds, and sometimes maybe follow your dreams is the thing to do, and maybe circumstances will arise in the course of a campaign that will propel you to the presidency.
Maybe so. Look, and I suppose Labour have had a lot of success in it. I suppose it's almost like looking at a league campaign or an FA Cup campaign. But, you know, Labour have had that. They've did the backing of Michael Lee Higgins, and, you know, they're supporting Catherine Connolly as well. But it is very difficult. Is the point that I was making, and that it probably is in need of reform if it is to matter. Like, I mean, if you're accepting the fact that it's a figurehead, it only has soft power, so it's a novel vote. Well and good, but I think if people want the presidency to matter, it will need some sort of reform. And I'm not sure that people always appreciate this is how a candidate is chosen, that really it's a knock-on from the general election, because who you vote for in the general election, completely democratic, by the way, so, like, I mean, as long as people appreciate that, the people that have the upper hand in the general election will have the upper hand in who are the candidates in the presidential election.
And do you have a fix on it? I mean, 20 Oireachtas members, you know, are you talking about changing the bar there? Is it, you know, fewer county councils or local authorities you'd be talking about? Or would you be trying to make it illegal that the whip would be applied in some fashion or form on political parties when, you know, it comes to allowing people through the local authority route?
Yeah, there's a few different scenarios, and again, these are just things I'm kind of teasing that could be for reform.
Yeah, sure, throw them out there. There might be other people who'll take against them, or there are other people who may be fully supportive.
So.
Yeah.
But from a council point of view, the council's powers have been really eroded, and this is one avenue that I thought maybe, you know, a council might have a say in national policy, or at least who is the president. And again, the candidates who are kind of coming to the council are almost like slumming it in comparison to the other ones because they don't have the Oireachtas' approval, and it's a difficult path to do. You know, on paper, mathematically, it seems like not a bad system because you could have 11 candidates through the Oireachtas and maybe another 7 through the county councils, you know, if everybody went with the maximal potential. But like, that's almost certainly not going to happen. And it looks like we might have 3, maybe 4 on the ballot. I suppose one solution you could do is if you went along the lines of a top 3 or top 4 with a proportional representation system in the Oireachtas, or if you change the criteria at council, like if you were to say something like 50 or even 100 councillors back in the candidate, regardless of their area,
all right,
that might offer other people routes.
So somebody could get a kind of a nationwide mandate from a number of councillors, maybe equivalent to the number of, you know, 3 or 4 local authorities.
That's on a local authority. Yeah, something like that. Because I suppose the way the local authorities are, they are effectively dominated by Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Sinn Féin.
Right.
So if they, as happened in Fine Gael's case officially, have decided to apply the whip, or in other parties maybe unofficially apply the whip, it's going to be nigh on impossible to get a candidate through that process.
But I mean, look, you live in the real world. You know, you can understand why they do this. You know, every political party, every army tries to shape the battlefield to their best advantage.
Fair enough, yeah, but I suppose I wrote the piece just to make sure voters were getting the full picture on how candidates got on the ballot.
Right. Well, look, job done. If you agree or disagree with Councillor Ciarán Fisher on his recommendations for reform, 51551 for your text, 087-484-8888 for your WhatsApp. So take a break. We're back in a minute.
Get in touch with Liveline on 0818-715-815.
Now, in November, it'll be 30 years since a legend of Irish rugby, Anthony Foley, first took to the field for his professional debut for Munster against Swansea. And people will obviously be aware that 9 years ago, his family lost him very suddenly in Paris. And his sister Orla is on the line. Orla, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Cullum. How are you?
Good. And
it's great to be on.
Well, it's great to have you on. You're only just back from Spain.
Italy.
I beg your pardon. Go on. Yeah, sorry.
I've made my way slowly down the leg of Italy, Colm. I'm 2 hours south of Naples. I've cycled. This leg I did Pisa, 810 kilometres via Rome, and had the most magical journey all the way down, even with the challenge of the Amalfi Coast. And every pedal of the journey is in honour of my brother. I celebrate the life he had and his memory and his legacy. He left a wealth of great memories and experiences, of which we at Munster and Irish Rugby all got to enjoy. And he was just a fantastic man. And I was privileged to have him as my brother.
And I was 9 years on. I mean, we've been talking about grief on the programme. People say, you know, time can help, but grief never gets easy.
Yeah, time. You learn to walk with your grief, Colm, over the years. Like, Anthony's death was so sudden, it was an awful shock. And research has shown that, like, a bereavement like that is the same as a brain injury. So you really are, your nervous system gets a complete shock. And luckily for me, I went into fundraising in his memory, and that has helped me to learn to walk with my journey. And I have had so many enriching experiences of people talking about what Anthony meant to them and helping raise nearly 70,000 for 3 amazing charities. And by movement and time in nature, that has really helped me get over the shock and be able to get to the point where I celebrate his memory. Unfortunately, what happens with grief, as we lost my mother in May, and on top of that brings up the old memories, you know, it just resurfaces. And I was listening to your lovely lady the other day, I think it was Daniela, and she was talking about her journey with oncology, and we'd lost mum the same route. And it's a very, very tough, traumatic journey. But we were lucky to have the support of Milford Hospice here in Limerick, which just really helped. And my whole journey through Italy, down the leg of Italy, was really just helping processing my recent loss of mum and having that time and that headspace, and then remembering Anthony and having that, like, I believe they're together in another world up there looking down on us. And it was just very poignant that I had that. And I got to Rome and I was able to light candles and pray for them and remember them. It was a beautiful journey, very privileged. And along the way, people have supported me amazingly. Mm. And one of the charities, CRY, who've been just instrumental since the start of Anthony's journey because he died of sudden adult death.
That stands for Cardiac Risk to the Young.
Yes, and they're having a family day this Saturday in Barberstown. And, you know, they've the screened families like ours that are at risk, help identify anyone that would be at risk in future and help take action to prevent that. And they're just amazing. It's a free service in all 32 counties of Ireland. They now offer counselling, continued support. They're doing amazing research. And it's a free event in Barberstown. You just have to register. And, you know, they're just an amazing charity. I have the privilege of giving something back, because when they gave me such great support in those early raw field days, it just felt natural to turn my grief into giving, and they've just been so supportive.
Right.
And then my mother benefited from Midwestern Cancer Foundation. That was all her journey. She was very quiet about her, private about her journey, but I saw the level of support. And Anthony had been an ambassador for them and donated his testimonial money. And then the IRFU Charitable Trust, column. When you have a, you know, brothers and sister and dad and niece and nephews that play rugby, you know, this is your worst fear, that someone has a life-changing injury. And the IRFU Charitable Trust does amazing work supporting those people who need their services. So it's so easy to get on the bike and cycle that crazy Amalfi Coast, because my journey isn't as tough as others.
You've used, I'm conscious of the, you know, the word journey several times there, Orland. You know, it's something, you know, whatever, you probably don't know at this stage what the final destination on that is. But, you know, he's a big guy. He was, you know, well over 6 foot, around 6 foot three or four, I think, and nearly 18 stone. And he, you know, he was a giant of a man, and all his life he'd been in top condition and everything else. He was still involved in the Munster setup. So the initial shock of it, after him having lived a life of physical excellence from sudden adult death, must have been just a bolt from the blue in the worst way possible.
It was incredible, you know, because he was really fit at the time. Even though he was retired and coaching, he still, you know, he was a real proponent of exercise. He loved exercise, as all the research will show you. Medicine, the best medicine in the world is exercise. But this underlying genetic weakness, that even though he'd been screened before and had heart tests, the research at the time didn't know enough about sudden adult death. And that's the great work of CRY and charities like CRY. They're doing that research. They're learning more, and they're sharing that information, because it's incredible when someone, like, we had just celebrated one of my nephew's birthdays, who's actually now playing for Ireland under 20s. We'd celebrated his 12th birthday a few days before Anthony died, and Anthony was in top form. You know, and in a blink, he was gone. You know, and it's just hard to make sense of at the time. But I also get peace, like, and I know, moved between the journeys, that Anthony didn't suffer the oncology journey, because he was so strong and so fit that, you know, to go in your sleep isn't the worst way in the world to go.
Mm.
And that's why having the support and the cancer services and the hospices, we really need them, because, you know, that everyone is entitled to that type of care. And I heard earlier on in the week, one of the listeners didn't get that type of care with her husband. And I think we really, someone told me yesterday that the Midlands doesn't have hospice care cover. So we really have to work together as a society to ensure that everyone, no matter what way we die, that we have dignity and privilege and grace surrounding us, helping our journey.
I think you were up on the bike, was it fundraising, within a year of his death. I mean, what pushed you in that direction? What made you decide that fundraising, activism really was going to be part of what helped you through your grief?
I cycled a Camino 5 months after Anthony died, celebrating, you know, his memory. And I got so much out of that journey. And I really felt like I left a lot of grief on the road. And it really helped me move on and learn to walk with my grief. And then
how do you mean you left the grief on the road? Did it help you work out the anger and the negativity that you might have been feeling about the unfairness of it as you cycled along, or what was that?
I never felt it was unfair, because I always knew Anthony died on Granny's anniversary. I felt that had been his time. But it was just raw grief. I nearly drowned in my own tears. Sometimes I couldn't see the road ahead as I was pedaling, because as I was in movement, I was able to, all the tears and the floods of tears were able to move through me. And like my friend that I cycled that journey with was also going through his own grief, and sharing that grief and sharing that journey with someone who understands where you're at really helped. And by the end, by the time we got to Santiago de Compostela, I just felt like a new woman, you know, really. I could breathe, I could see, I could, you know, it's like going from black and white to technicolor again.
Did you talk to him on the road? Because I know you have a faith that, you know, you believe he's with your mother and your mother is with him now. But did you have conversations with him on the road? Did you address your thoughts to him?
Regularly. And I see eights everywhere and signs from him, and, you know, names of streets and numbers always come up. You know, there's always signs. I've always, like, even the famous win that I believe you're from Salins, Cullum.
I am.
Salins Dramatic Society are part of the fundraiser and have an amazing place, Soldier Field, which is back after being sold out earlier this year. That's back. And that win in Soldier Field, that had all the messages, and CJ Stander talks about it, that they could feel him and it was palpable.
This is a drama based on the defeat of the All Blacks by Ireland in Chicago, which is a kind of a follow-on to, I suppose, it's your own father played a role in a previous defeat of the All Blacks, the famous one against when Munster beat them in the 70s.
He sure did, and there was a bit of banter always about that between Dad and Anthony. And the last time Anthony played the All Blacks, the scoreline was the exact reverse opposite scoreline than when we finally beat them in Chicago. So, you couldn't but see signs. He was giving us lots of messages, and, like, even that iconic eight that it is. I wasn't at the ground. I got to watch it. That was just one of those purely beautiful, magical moments in life, and just really honoured that my brother was remembered in that way. And one of the things about being a rugby supporter, I call Thomond Park my church. Like, I've seen more miracles in Thomond Park with all our amazing wins when Anthony was playing with Munster, and since then we've had a few as well. That really takes you out of the drudgery of everyday life and being caught in pure logical black and white thinking in your head, to going, there's a bit of magic in this life. There's more to it. And that, you know, that's the beautiful thing about sport. It's the beautiful thing about what I've done, which has turned grief into giving.
Do you draw from the big, you know, the sense of the Munster family and that church that is Thomond Park, and, you know, in your own hometown of Killaloe, where he, you know, it should be said that he also played GAA at a representative level as well. I mean, he was a multi-talented sportsman. What the sporting communities that come out in solidarity with you, is that a help? Because other people, their grief can be lonelier.
It's been an amazing help. Like, even as I tackled the Amalfi Coast this time, and if you've ever been to the Amalfi Coast, it is absolutely crazy climbs, crazy drivers, and crazy beautiful scenery. And I had got lovely video messages from Mike McCarthy, Tommy Bowe, Harry McNulty, and a few other of the guys. They sent me lovely encouraging video messages, and it really helped me dig deep when I needed to. And that's what the rugby family and the, you know, the sporting family in Ireland are. Everyone is your cheerleader. They really help you dig deep and find what you need to in that dark moment or that hard challenging where you don't think there is a way. It helps you find a way. And we are great, and it's not just sport in Ireland, in community. Like the whole community here when Anthony died in Killaloe were absolutely exceptional. I couldn't believe the acts of kindness and generosity, how they looked after all the visitors who came to share the condolences. Like, we have something magic here in Ireland. We don't have the sunshine I saw on the Amalfi Coast, but I Irish people are the sunshine. Like, we're very, very privileged. And I hope we can nurture that and keep that and, you know, be kind and keep that community and that sense of community in a changing Ireland, and that we can keep that.
All right, Orla, look, thanks very much for joining us today. Unfortunately, the clock is up against us, but you've been very generous with your time on that. We're going to take a quick break. We're back in a minute.